Hey everyone, it's Harmon, and today we have a special Comedy History 101 select for you. Yes, it's one of our earliest episodes on the history of SCTV, Second City Television. And you can tell it's one of our first episodes because the mic quality is really crappy. Before we jump into the episode, take some time to like, subscribe, and comment on Comedy History 101. Either on iTunes or Stitcher or Spotify or wherever you get this damn podcast. And without further ado.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured the audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.
Dude, there's so much funny shit on SCTV. Oh my God, yes. I'm just looking here, like the five neat guys.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was awesome.
But did you see, like, Milton Berle giving them an Emmy? He's just an asshole.
Yeah, I know.
Count us in, dude.
Okay. 3, 2.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of
Comedy History 101.
Where we bring you the history of comedy. I am Harmon Leon, and with me is...
I am Scott Colonico. How are you doing, Harmon?
Yeah, I'm fine, Scott. How are you? Thank you for asking.
You're welcome.
You're could have just launched right into the podcast without any, you know, cordial greetings. But you took time to ask how I was. I am fine. How are you, Scott?
Yeah, I'm fine, Armin. Thank you. You know, the thing is, politeness doesn't cost, manners doesn't cost anything.
No. People remember you if you're nice to them.
Oh yeah, exactly. So I'm.
And just going by the Buddhist saying, niceness should not be mistaken for weakness.
Right. Yeah. Of course. We can be nice. Thank you.
But should we use the converse? Weakness should not be mistaken for niceness. Does that work?
I think I'm trying to wrap my head around that right now to see all the implications.
Oh shit! I think it's another podcast in itself.
I think we keep spinning these off. We should have like somebody just following us around and like.
Well, I think we should be a think tank where the people come to us going, I want to start one of these podcasts, but I don't know where to begin.
Well,
I have no ideas.
Well, here's a few of ours that we're not using.
Yeah, well, here's one. It's called Weakness Should Not Be Mistaken for Niceness.
And here's another one called Is This Thing On? About the
the history of microphones.
And technicians who test audio equipment.
Yeah, and here's another one called Google This. The history of people that Googled things. But today, this podcast here, this one within this audio space, this one here, Scott, when I say the words Second City Television, SCTV, what comes to mind in your brain thinking device?
This is the SCTV Television Network.
Oh, well, first of all, is an immortal line uttered by Johnny LaRue. Is crane shot. Crane shot.
And what's the context of that one? I know the context of that one.
Okay. Well, I believe that was from the Polynesian Town episode where there was a crane shot, and Johnny LaRue, the famous director, wanted a crane shot to end the movie with, and he had to keep begging for money.
What a day. I lost my business, I lost my best friend, and I lost my pants.
Forget it, LaRue. This is Polynesian Town.
First, we should tell people what SCTV is, in case they don't know, you know? SCTV was, it was a Canadian television sketch show that began in 1976, and ran to 1984.
This is SCTV Channel 109 in Mellonville, Cable 6.
And it was started by the Toronto troupe of Second City. And the premise of the show was it was a television station in the fictional town of Melonville.
Melonville, yes.
Yeah, so, and the television station was run by the greedy Guy Caballero.
And now, an interesting message from SCTV President Guy Caballero.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is my policy here at SCTV to hire the best people for the job. That's why I hire illegal aliens.
He was kind of, how would you describe him? He was kind of like a Godfather figure, and we also, and then that played off later on, who was in a wheelchair, which was largely just due to he wanted to get sympathy from his business deal, because there's some shows where he's dancing around. And the original cast of SCTV consisted of
starring John Candy, Joe Flaherty, Eugene Levy, Andrea Martin, Catherine O'Hara, Harold Ramis, and Dave Thomas as the Beaver.
Yeah, we'll see people will still pop up now again. I believe people might be familiar with Mr. Martin Short, who appearing on Broadway and movies and whatnot. But they're all still around and doing well, except for John Candy, obviously. But they're all still keeping active and out there.
Yeah. So it was pretty much, it's a pretty iconic sketch show. So and what differentiated it from like other sketch shows was it all kind of lived in this the world of this TV station in Melville. So not only would you have the sketches, which were largely kind of like a vehicle to parody movies and TV of the time, because it was like it was like they're trying to emulate an average broadcasting day on SCTV in Melonville.
Yeah.
So you would have not only the shows, but you would also have behind the scenes of the shows and the interplay between the characters and the station manager and all that. And for that, it was very, kind of the first show of its kind to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading something that I'd never liked. So part of the reasoning, Guy Caballero's reasoning, was that he was too cheap to buy a normal network. This is his logic. The normal network would just buy like repeats and show them, but he was too cheap, so he would just hire like all these people to do all these knockoff shows. So that's why you had this revolving cast of characters coming on and doing all these different shows that would appear and reappear and just work with the lowest production values they could.
Yeah. And essentially, in real life, they were working with the lowest production value
they could.
Possible. Yeah. Did you know? So for the total budget of the first seven episodes of SCTV was $35,000.
Which is works out to what? That's like five grand a show.
Yeah. So basically, they were making like no money on those early episodes. Yeah. But how it came about was it branched directly off from Second City. Second City started in Chicago, and then in 1975, they opened a branch in Toronto. I might be wrong on that date. It might be a little earlier.
Okay, leave a pause, and maybe you could.
Do you want to? No, pause? I'm scrolling. I'm scrolling okay. Here.
I'll set up. You look at this.
We'll leave the pause. Yeah, it had to start in '75.
Okay.
So, anyways, it started. So, Second City came from Chicago, and a lot of the cast. The original cast, where a lot of them started in this legendary production in Toronto of Godspell in 1973. Go ahead, dude. That was a production that not only had Martin Short, but also Andrew Martin, Eugene Levy, Paul Schaefer was the musical director, and I believe Ivan Reitman might have been.
I think he produced
somehow
it.
Involved.
Yeah. Yeah. So you had this huge, crazy, Gilda Radner.
Yeah, Gilda Radner, who dated Martin Short at the time.
So you get this huge, crazy cast of like future stars, they call it the legendary Godspell show.
Yeah, it was crazy. So originally, Eugene Levy in the Godspell show auditioned for the role of Jesus, but according to the director, he looked too Jewish. And which was, I don't know, is that a bad thing? Because Jesus was Jewish.
He was, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, or the producers, though, they thought he was too hairy. He felt that so much hair would scare kids during the matinees.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And even before Godspell, to have another SCTV sort of link was Eugene Levy is from Hamilton, a town called Hamilton in Canada. Is that Ontario? I don't know. Leave a comment below if we're wrong on that. But not, and he went to McMaster's University in Hamilton. And not only did he go to McMaster's, but also Martin Short and Dave Thomas. And here's another weird twist, is that Martin Short dated Eugene Levy's sister.
Yeah.
I was just saying Martin Short got around.
And yeah.
Yeah. So Ivan Reitman also went to McMaster's University in Hamilton. And that's how Eugene Levy got his start, was he became friends with Ivan Reitman. And they didn't really have like a theater department or a film department. But, they had a group called the McMaster's Film Board. And they would just start making movie shorts. And Ivan Reitman moved to Toronto to make his first movie, which was called Foxy Lady. Yeah. And Levy was kind of just sort of he was like an engineer major. And then I think he was just sort of doing crappy in school because he was more interested in theater. And he just said, can I come work on your movie to Ivan Reitman? And he said, oh, the only job I have is like coffee boy. Which was actually not a role, but an actual coffee boy for like $60 a week. He said, I can't pay you that little. And he said, no, I'll take the job. And from there, Eugene Levy moved to Toronto. And then he worked on actually in a role in Ivan Reitman's next movie, which was Cannibal Girls.
Mm-hmm.
And Andrew Martin was in the movies as well. So they kind of hooked up together, got their start. First from the Ivan Reitman movies, then moved on to Godspell.
Yeah, and then from there it was nonstop.
Yeah, but it was like kind of like a happy coincidence, because like after Godspell, you have all these people in Toronto that worked on it that were soon to become famous, and then Second City opened up a branch in Toronto. So. From there, they just became like, right into Second City.
Yeah, I mean, it was just kind of like ready to go. Here you guys go. You're all here. Let's get it started. And then they had, because Saturday Night Live started in 75. So these guys had something to kind of look towards, so that and then there was that whole National Lampoon thing was going on at the same time, which Reitman and those guys were all involved with as well. And people were kind of picking the corpse. They were all stealing cast members from each other.
Yeah. So Saturday Night Live came about in 1975. So at the time, the big sort of sketch improv groups was the National Lampoon touring show, which had like John Belushi and Bill Murray in it. And Second City. So Saturday Night Live came about, and they just started scooping all the best players. I mean, pretty much the early Saturday Night Live was National Lampoon.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Bernie Sahlins, who started Second City, said, instead of like having Saturday Night Live just kind of scoop all our best talent, why don't we start a TV show? So what they did was they listed Harold Ramis to be the head writer, and they did the show initially for two seasons on the CBC.
Okay, yeah, because the Ramis, it's kind of interesting watching Ramis on that show, because you're not expecting him, and then all of a sudden he's there.
What the hell? Hello,
hello, Mr. Dunston. This is Mo Green on SCTV's Feedback.
Mo Green, you stink. You know that.
You must be thinking of the other Mo Green.
He was born an American. He was an American guy in the Canadian cast.
Well, that's a misnomer, because there were kind of mixed Americans and Canadians.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. So Andrea Martin is actually from Portland, Maine.
Really? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you learn something new every day. We're doing this podcast.
Yeah, yeah. And Joe Flaherty, he was born in, I think he was born in Pittsburgh.
Huh, okay. Well, they can be.
Yeah, but the whole deal is like, you know, they came over from the original Second City in Chicago, you know, and then they opened this new branch of Second City in Toronto.
Right.
And Kathleen O'Hara actually started as a waitress at Second City.
Oh, yeah. And so just to
when she was 20.
To go back to your Bernie Sollins. So Bernie Sollins was actually one of the founders of Second City Improv Troupe in Chicago. And then, then he went on to do the founding the Toronto one in 73. Yeah,
exactly. So, and here's another twist is Catherine O'Hara's brother dated Gilda Radner.
So
it's all kind of incestuous.
Yeah, we need like a flow chart or something to keep up with all this.
Yeah, so Harold Ramis served as the original head writer for the first couple of seasons of SCTV, and they filmed 16 shows in 7 weeks.
Yeah, and so could I bring up here, I just wanted to mention, this is like, I don't know why this is burned into my brain. I ran into Harold Ramis at the Austin Film Festival, and I got to shake his hand and tell him this, but my favorite Harold Ramis bit, the one I remember, was when he played he was playing a Swedish policeman called Klog. Klagg. And he would catch people by throwing his shoes at them, you know, his wooden shoes, his clogs.
Oh, so he's like an odd job, but with instead of like a deadly weapon hat, he had deadly clogs.
Yeah, he threw the clogs at him to catch your criminals.
Oh man, that's funny.
So I got to see him. I saw him at Austin Film Festival, and I just wanted to say I wanted to shake the hand of the man who was Clog.
And what did he say about that?
He kind of laughed. He said, "Thank you."
Harold Ramis actually called SCTV. He referred to it as the poor cousin to Saturday Night Live.
Aww.
No, it's just true. So Saturday Night Live, as you know, it's a live show filmed in front of a live studio audience. And Second City was they had no audience, so it was like, as Eugene Levy described it, it was like an editing show. So, you know, they weren't playing the characters for an audience. They're like, you know, they were never, you know, holding for the laughs. They were just, so it's more kind of an ensemble, you know, actory type thing where, you know, Saturday Night Live is played, you know, you're performing for an audience. So that was like a huge difference. And originally there was like no laugh track to the show. And then they played it back with no laugh track, and it just was, I don't know, I think Eugene Levy thought it was like kind of creepy.
Yeah,
so
it's kind of weird because you and I have both been kind of binge watching these, and it's just, I mean, I guess you kind of need the laugh track there. It just does sound kind of weird because it's just, I can't really describe it, but it's just like, you do feel like you need something there.
Yeah, so then they went back and they played the clips in front of a live audience and recorded their laughter. But then it was like all the timing was off because they'd be laughing over, you know, laugh lines and setups and things like that. So eventually they just went for like a straight up sort of laugh track with the show.
Yeah, so that's just – it's just – you know, you hate to people try to fight it, but then it's just like, it's something that sometimes you just need it there for some reason.
Yeah. So after the first two initial seasons, it's filmed for the CBC, but it was also in syndication, like in the States. So it would pop up on, you know, just random times, no matter who was like what city was syndicating it. And after two seasons, no one picked up the syndication.
Okay.
So that you think, that's the end of SCTV. But this like millionaire in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Which, have you been to Edmonton?
No, I have not.
And I don't want to offend any of our Edmonton listeners, but it's kind of a shithole.
Oh my god, that's a little offensive. You could have picked a different word.
Yeah, okay, we'll beep that out.
All right.
Yeah, so it was this billionaire in Edmonton. He said, you know, he thought the show was like, you know, an important, you know, cultural, you know, relevance to Canada, like putting it out there in the world. And he said, you know, if you move your production to Edmonton, I will match your production budget.
Who was so, this?
I'm not sure what his name was, but he was an Edmonton millionaire.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, just Google it, dude.
We're supposed to be sharing this with people. I'll look it up.
But yeah. So that's why they moved to Edmonton, and they said like they were so happy, like the production value just like went way up, and it really kind of helped them focus on just like writing the show because there's really not much else to do for Edmonton. But they loved the crew because like the crew before that. In Edmonton, like they were used to like filming like carpet commercials and, you know, industrial videos.
For those of you who want to know a little bit more about the Edmonton SCTV shooting locations, somebody has made a helpful Google map. So with all the location episodes on here for like Polynesian Town and Play It Again, Bob, and some of the and the Jerry Todd Show, I believe probably the
the Jerry Todd Show,
the famous golf course. Yeah, so those you can find those if you just do Google Edmonton SCTV shooting locations.
Or better yet, we will post it on our website. Well, save.
Okay, and how is it? RTCKSave.com.
Yeah, we'll post it. We'll post it in the blog post.
All right, there you go. Thank you. All right, good enough. All right.
But yeah. So they thought like the best episodes were the ones they filmed in Edmonton. And then on the third after the third season, that's when Rick Moranis came in.
Okay. All right.
Yes. And Rick Moranis was the only one who came in from the world of stand-up.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So have we heard any? Can you drop a clip of his stand-up in here?
I tried to find his stand-up, but only thing I could find was when he was hosting Saturday Night Live.
Okay, all right.
And also on the third season, two of the most forgettable Second City or SCTV performers, Robin Duke and Tony Rosato.
Oh no! Now are we going to talk?
But oddly enough, they both went on to be on SNL.
Yeah, I did. So while we were doing some research for the show, I took it upon myself to find out a little bit more about Mr. Rosato, Armin. If you're curious, he's actually from the same part of Italy as my family. So he's down from the south, down from Naples.
Yep.
And apparently, so he was on, after he left Saturday Night Live, he kind of started doing a lot of voiceover work, but then ran into some trouble with the cops, legal issues, back in 2005.
What happened?
He was charged with criminal harassment of his wife Leah.
Ooh, that's not good.
Things got a little nasty for Mr. Rosato, and he is.
Yeah, he passed away in
January at the age of 62 this year. So yeah,
but I think the best one he's known for, which is one of the very classic SCTV skits, was. The Midnight Express special. Right. It was like Abbott and Costello. It was a cross between a TV show called The Midnight Special, hosted by Wolfman Jack, and Midnight Express, the Turkish prison movie.
Written by Oliver Stone, no less.
Exactly. So you have Abbott and Costello. Costello was played by Tony Rosato.
So Lou, why don't you introduce the band?
You want me to introduce the band?
That's right.
All right, I'll introduce the band. What band?
The band.
What's the name of the band?
I'm telling you, man, the band.
Well, who's the band?
No. Who's on next week?
What are you asking me for?
I'm not asking you. I'm telling you. Who's on next week?
Well, what do I care who's on next week? If I'm going to introduce the band tonight, I got to know their name.
That is their name.
That's whose name?
The band. What's the matter with you?
And Abbott was played by Eugene Levy. They're going through customs in Turkey, and they find some hashish in their luggage.
Hey, where'd you get that package?
Oh, a fella gave it to me.
What fella?
This fella right behind
There's nobody there. Well, he was here a minute ago.
Didn't I tell you not to talk to anybody?
Oh, honest, Buzz, I didn't say anything to anybody. He just gave me this cake to give to his grandmother.
You, what's in the box?
I'm sorry, I can't talk to anybody.
Answer the man.
Harmon, one of the things that you're mentioning here, when you started talking, you had this jotted down, was that while they're shooting in Edmonton, you know, things would get really creative, and you were saying something about how the caterer would suggest things.
Yeah, they would be open to just having the crew give suggestions on. It was like, you know, it goes back to, it's just like, everyone was just really gung-ho to be working on this. Yeah. And Andrew Martin said they would even take, like, suggestions from, like, the boom mic guy or the caterer. If they had, like, good ideas, they would just go with it, you know? They were just all kind of, you know, for the large part, just all good-natured Canadians.
Yeah, they're very polite.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then from there, so then the show moved over to NBC. And the execs would come up. Once it did, the execs would come up to Edmonton and give them like notes, and there'd be like really bad notes, like Eugene Levy would say, because essentially what Eugene Levy said was it was kind of like, you know, the lunatics running the asylum, like no one really like looked after them, so they pretty much could do like anything they wanted to do, like with the show. But when they moved to NBC, like the execs wanted it, they just like, why don't you be like Saturday Night Live and put all your, you know, big laughs up front? And then, you know, kind of that more experimental stuff. You put it, you know, in the last half hour when no one's watching.
Yeah, I saw the bumpers. And so what they would do would be, because they'd show it right after Saturday Night Live. And so they would have the NBC bumper. The SCTV would start out the show with the NBC bumper that would eventually, it would get pushed off the screen by the SCTV bumper. So it'd give you that illusion of you're now watching a different network.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And an interesting thing is, like, they would film sketches, and if the sketches didn't go that well, they would always have these little promos for shows in between, sketches.
Right.
You know, like, coming next week.
Yeah.
And it would just be, like, about a minute promo. But basically, for the most part, those were sketches that just didn't work. And so they would just be cut down to like a minute and used as like kind of like the Terry Gilliam animation, mm-hmm. you know, kind of link in between the sketches.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I think like one that didn't work was like a thing called Melvin and Howard's.
Yeah.
Melvin Dubar is the driver. Howard Hughes is the passenger. It's Melvin and Howard, Thursday at 9 on SCTV.
Oh, I don't feel so good.
Which was like, you know, so they just cut it down to a promo. So it was basically a spoof on the movie Melvin and Howard. Mm-hmm. But in the SCTV one, it was like Melvin and Howard's, and the Howard's were like the three Stooges.
Yeah, they would just, because you can get away with it. You don't have to have an ending. There's just nothing there. It just like starts and stops, and that's it, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that was like the equivalent of what they would do on like a Second City stage when you have a blackout in between scenes. They would throw in these like promos as the blackout, you know, to, you know, it would just keep things rolling.
Yeah, I think, and then also around this period is when the NBC, they were kind of pushing them to have musical guests and stuff.
Yeah.
And the SCTV guys would fight that or just, you know, resist it a little bit by saying, well, if there's a musical guest, we have to give them a reason to be here. Like they would, like, have a job on the show. And mm-hmm. so, like, one of the ones I remember was they had the Tubes on. At the time, you know, She's a Beauty was pretty big, so early 80s, and the Tubes were on, but they weren't just singing. They were a guest on the Fishing Musician. They wound up being guests on that show.
From all over the world, musicians come to Gil Fisher's Scuttlebutt Lodge to be on the Fishing Musician.
I think it was the episode called Bouncing Back to You when it was Lola Heatherton.
Yes.
And she was like a, I don't know, they do a lot of like smarmy Vegas type characters mm-hmm. on SCTV. Yeah. And so she was making her big primetime comeback variety special.
Ladies and gentlemen, live from the SCTV studios, bouncing back to you, it's Lola Heatherton.
Like Guy Cabareau, like says, yank her off, get her off there. And then, so they pull her off stage and she was quickly replaced by the tubes.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. There's our musical guest.
Yeah. So when we talk about like some of our favorite bits, that's always fun.
Yeah. Okay. No. Well, of course. That's kind of the thing, dude. We're riffing. We're all riffing here. Yeah. Well, of course, you know, I gotta go. One of my picks would be Bob and Doug.
Okay, good day. Welcome to the Great White North. I'm Bob McKenzie. This is my brother, Doug.
How's it going, eh?
And whoa, did you hear about... Well, you can tell.
Okay, you hear about the guy who, like, was opening a beer, eh, and, like, went to drink and then did the stupid thing of looking in the bottle and, whoa, there's a mouse in his bottle, eh?
Real mouse. Well, I guess it was dead, right? Drowned from the beer. And drunk, too.
Drowned, like it died too. Had a smile on its face, eh?
Bob and Doug saw the movie in the theater. I still think
Strange Brew.
Strange Brew. I think if you still go back and you watch these, they're still funny because they actually, you come off where you can actually believe they're real life brothers. I think that's kind of the thing. If you watch them, they do seem like it's that kind of playoff each other. And then I think what's interesting to me is like in the tradition of the comedy duo, the straight man and whatnot. Like even when you have kind of like these couple dim-witted guys, there's always one who's like kind of the smart guy.
Yeah.
You know, like in this case, Bob, he's kind of like the smarter dim-wit. It's kind of like, you know, even in Cheech and Chong, you still got, you know, Cheech is kind of the smart guy. You know, there's always, they keep it up that tradition of the one smart guy. And Bob and Doug, I think it's still funny. I think it still holds up because it's just that kind of juvenile humor.
Explain the premise if, like, people haven't seen it.
Well, the premise is that these two guys, Bob and Doug McKenzie, have their own TV show. It's kind of like a, I guess you could see where...
it's almost like a Wayne's World.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
I just watched, like, a new one. It's like, this is kind of Wayne's World.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say.
So our topic today is how to stuff a mouse into a beer bottle without without breaking it.
Its
bones.
Right.
So that they'll look at it and give you a case and not think you hosed them by deliberately stuffing one in, eh? It's like shipbuilding in a bottle, okay?
Right.
Kind of like it's the same premise of Wayne's World. But these guys, on SCTV, they're having a little bit of fun with the Canadian TV board in that SCTV was told, or Canadian programs were told, that they had to have a certain amount of Canadian themed programming on their shows, and so this is like their kind of thumb, you know, up the nose to the Canadian powers that be, where they go, okay, we're gonna make the most Canadian show you've ever seen, which has resulted in this, you know,
the most successful thing that ever came out of SCTV.
Yeah, two guys wearing parkas and toques and drinking Molson beer, you know.
So yeah,
that's about
and
this.
Eating donuts, yeah. Eating Tim Horton donuts,
and about the most Canadian thing you can see. And I think the movie holds up pretty well too. It's the interaction between those two guys that's funny.
Yeah, I saw the movie a while ago. I know it's like based on Hamlet.
Yeah, it is totally. Yeah, it is. Castle Elsinore. Elsinore beer. Yeah. And Max von Sydow is in it.
Really?
Yeah, he's like the main bad guy.
As himself?
He's kind of the main bad guy. No, he's like some evil dude.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it holds up. So that I would have to say that would be one of my favorite sketches.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's hard, like I was like binge watching like the last few days and there was like so many that you forgot about. Like, I think like I like Sammy Modlin, who's kind of like he's like a smarmy Las Vegas, talk show host, which they actually got the idea, like in the early 70s, Sammy Davis Jr. had a talk show on.
Okay.
And it was just like that, where everyone's just sort of kissing each other's ass, and his sidekick is William B. William, who's John Candy, who laughs kind of like this. And they always have Bobby Bittman on, like this.
How are ya?
Bittman is back on the Sammy Modlin Show.
Yeah, and I mean, it was Eugene Levy, and then they had it was Mel's Rock Pile, which was like their version of the speaking of Eugene Levy, that was Eugene Levy as the host, and it was kind of like a midnight special kind of TV rock show that were popular back in the 70s, but he was just like a really, really horrible host, and it was Mel's Rock Pile.
Hello again, and welcome to Mel's Rock Pile. I'm Rockin' Mel Slurp, and we're going to have a lot of fun on the Rock Pile this week. We're going to be doing a little music and doing a little talking to some of the kids on the dance floor here.
So, and do you see the Bobby Bittman episode where he brings out his brother Skip?
A little bit. Tell me more about it, Harmon.
Skip's an aspiring stand-up comedian, and he's just like, "Hey, I'm, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the President of the United States, John Wayne."
Now listen, and listen good. I'm the president. Okay, I'm going to go over and talk to Secretary of State Jimmy Cagney. I'm going to walk over. John Wayne walking over. President John Wayne. Okay, Secretary of State.
And then he calls, then he's like, they go to panel, and like Skip calls Bobby Herschel, like his real, and they start arguing in Yiddish.
Herschel.
It's they not, didn't know that his name was Herschel.
It doesn't matter.
They didn't know his name was Herschel.
They don't care. My parents still call me Tzvi and him Herschel. You know, in Philadelphia, when they put on the Maudlin show, they say, well, put it on and watch Sammy Maudlin. Will you be in Herschel Slansky?
That's what they call it. Know you're Herschel Slansky.
What's this from here?
What's the extra here? Good if it's hard to be a tiny.
The thanks the Gavation going to bring him there off the Maudlin show.
They have been the Maudlin show. Glacier Gadilla.
Yeah, I mean, they had the ability to do... you know, these crazy, like, they could stretch gags on for a while. I think, because we both kind of had this down here. Because I really remember this, too, at the time. It was, like, when the SCTV feed got jammed by the Russians.
Good day, people. This is Today is Moscow. I am Valery Kometsky.
And I am Ivan Mihailov. Show today is crowded, so we must move quick.
First, we say welcome to new viewers in Mellonville and Tri-City area.
So they started showing all these programs. It was just like bad Russian, but it was just like those horrible Russian game shows. And then you have written, we have both written down here in our notes, what fits into Russia.
Yeah.
Which was just Dave Thomas standing in front of a big map of Russia, putting on a bad Russian accent and slapping countries onto the map, going, look how they disappear in the vastness of the Ukraine.
Hello, people. Yeah. Welcome to What Fits Into Russia. Yesterday, the last country we put in place was Angola. And look, with these other countries, not even half filling Mother Russia because of its enormous size. And look at rest of world. He's almost gone.
But I love it when they go to, like, there's a TV show, and they go, oh, let's show them the new mini cams.
And then that was one where it was Yorgi in the tractor, where John Candy had a talking tractor.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And John Candy also played the happy Kozak.
Yeah, that was...
Oh, was that Yorgi?
Yeah, it was Yorgi, he had a talking tractor.
Hey, Yorgi. He's coming to your town, hey, Yorgi. He never wears a frown, hey, Yorgi. He's as happy as can be, 'cause all of Russia is Yorgi's family. Hey, Yorgi!
Yeah. But I think my favorite, I don't know, there's so many favorites, but is Count Floyd.
Count Floyd here. Saturday night, kids. Time for another monster chiller horror theater. Oh! Woo! Woo!
Count Floyd's good, and I think what made because the Count Floyd character,
like here, like Joe Flaherty is such a, like, I think he was so underrated on that show.
Oh, yeah,
or maybe was... not, or just rated to be at the right amount.
Well, he was such a straight
guy.
He
was kind of like, almost say he's like the Graham Chapman.
Yeah, yeah, he was such a straight guy in most of the, you could tell he had a little fun playing Guy Caballero, where he could like get mad at people, but he was such a straight guy, kind of. And the Count Floyd, I think what made the Count Floyds even better, I mean, yeah, obviously the character Count Floyd was pretty funny, but then they would just use that as an excuse to link all these bad movies to it, you know? Then they would have, like, the probably the most classic one would be The Whispers of the Wolf, where he thinks he's going to show this movie about a werewolf, and the movie's called Whispers of the Wolf, and it turns out to be like this Ingmar Bergman like Swedish film.
Oh, it takes place in some place in Europe somewhere. Count Floyd hasn't seen the movie, so I'll be watching it along with you, so stay tuned now. You're gonna be scared right out of your pants, or dresses, or whatever you wear. Let's take a look at the film.
Yeah.
It's just like really like one of the most depressing things you could ever see. And they would just keep showing clips of it, and they would do the typical movie thing where they'd come back to Camp Floyd, and he would try to keep it, make it sound scary.
Oh, wasn't that scary? Ooh, I got scared, kids. Oh, all right, that wasn't scary. The movie wasn't scary. Ingmar Bergman. Who booked Bergman? Who booked that film? Prickly. Mrs. Prickly did, huh? Great. Woo!
And
he said, he set it up with, I know we've been getting a lot of letters from the kids saying the show just isn't scary.
The wolf, Whispers of the Wolf. And then he'd get mad at people off screen. That was always good. So Joe Flaherty was really good at getting mad at people.
Yeah, so basically that they were just parodying Ingmar Bergman's personas.
Right, yeah, totally. And it was, and they're even like talking like fake Swedish, and they had subtitles on it and everything.
Yeah. But then there's the whole series of the 3D movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like Dr. Tong.
And the Midnight Cowboy in 3D was always my favorite.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they had the whole series, like Dr. Tong's 3D House of Pancakes.
Right, yeah. 3D House of Stewardesses, I think, was one.
Yeah, 3D House of Stewardesses. Yeah. So it's always like John Candy, like, putting something right to the camera in 3D with that music.
Yeah.
Woo! One bit that just was randomly. Do you see Benny Hill Street Blues?
Just weird. I just watched. Yeah. I just watched that. Yeah. Oh, governor. And then he would just do that look at the camera and just go.
The Benny Hill Street Blues, award-winning scenarios, unforgettable characterizations. So be sure to watch the show, of which critic Rhoda Barrett said,
"I nearly laughed me bleeding rump off."
I think that's like their legacy. Is like they were so spot on with their parodies and satire.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, it was just like, you know. I mean, who else would do a Bergman takeoff? You know what I mean?
Oh, and you know, and then they could do like everything from like The Godfather. Do you see The Godfather? Guy Cabarrot's The Godfather,
no,
and then Floyd the Barber from the Andy Griffith show. It's like he's like, don't worry, we'll break Opie's arms. Like, Opie came in for a haircut and didn't pay for it. It's like, oh, we'll go and we'll break Opie's arms. It's like, oh, no, I think you don't have to do that.
I think what, because even though Rick Moranis coming in at the end, but still. The thing we both mentioned also.
Gary Todd.
The Jerry Todd.
Jerry Todd weather.
Dude, how would you even explain him?
He was like he called himself a video DJ.
Disc jockey. Yeah.
And so it would just be this guy sitting in front of a master control unit just doing like the most cheesiest video switching you could ever think of.
Yeah, I like that. Some beautiful video from Tom Monroe from his latest disc entitled Tom Monroe on a New Wavelength. And that's a pretty thing called Turning Japanese. And a good morning to you. Welcome back to the Jerry Todd Show here in the wee small ones of a Saturday morning. We've got some fine video for you this morning, as well as another incredible contest cash call and a lot more.
And so I only saw like one episode of that. Would he have like musical guests on each show? Or
no, he would just, it was just kind of like little short video clips of that. And probably the most famous one, or the people that most know the one, is where he played a video with himself, where he's singing the Vapors song "Turning Japanese," which was kind of a semi-hit in the 80s. But the way he's singing it like a Perry Como, like a really slow version, and he's just singing it instead of saying turning Japanese, he's singing, I'm turning Japanese.
Turning Japanese, turning Japanese, I really think so.
Oh, I also like the Schmengi brothers.
Of course,
the Polka brothers.
Right, Polka
John
brothers.
Candy and Eugene Levy.
Yeah, which they
sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that I guess we could use this as a segue into like the later ones, because they came out at when the SCTV moved to, is it Cinemax?
Yeah, they moved to Cinemax in the last year.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So that was kind of like one of the big things that came out of those years. Who left and who stayed?
Let's see. Well, I know who came. Like in the last two seasons, that's where you get the powerhouse of Martin Short.
Mm-hmm.
So he came in the last two years of the show.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he brought everything from what's the guy's name?
Ed Grimley.
Yeah, Ed Grimley.
Cheers.
And do you see the one, Whatever Happened to Baby Ed?
Yeah, oh yeah, of course. This is the classic.
Oh, I told Mr. DeMille to hold that shot longer, you know.
Ed Grimley is riveting. Jerry Gladman, Melonville Free Press.
Still a pretty good picture, I must say.
Still watching that garbage?
Boris Birch's performance in Baby Ed is Oscar bait. George Anthony, Melonville Sun.
See, you know what's it's interesting is you can watch those where like an SCTV where Ed Grimley's kind of developed as this like actual, because he had a job at the station. He did something at the station and like he was like an actual character, you know, guy who had all these different, you know, facets to him, and it was funny, but like he was like more than that. Whereas when Short moves to SNL. You know, cause I guess it's just a different format. He's just got to play up more for laughs, you know. But it was interesting to see, you know, those two comparisons. You can kind of see the different styles of comedy there, or what you had to do before a live audience and what you can get away with on.
You just have to be bigger in front of a live audience. Where I mean that just goes back to that they weren't playing for, you know, they were just holding. They weren't holding for the laughs.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
You know, it was just more ensemble, you know, acting that went on. I think my favorite Martin Short guy was like, and it's timely now. He plays the oil company executive.
Oh yeah,
He's on 60 Minutes.
Right. Yeah.
Did you know that since 1988 we've had the 9 hottest years on record?
I know that. You don't think I know that? I represent the oil companies. I would be very aware of that.
Yeah, but that was the one on Saturday Night Live. But he'd done that character, Thurman. Nathan?
Yeah.
Yeah, he'd done that character on SCTV. Yeah,
smarmy dude. So he essentially brought like all his big characters over to Saturday Night Live. Like, So anyways, in 1982... They won the Emmy for Outstanding Writing in a Variety Program.
Okay, excellent.
And for a sketch called Moral Majority. Did you ever see that sketch? I think it's like Merv Griffin is in The Sheriff of Mayberry, maybe.
Okay.
And then I think all these right-wing conservative groups were about to pull like the advertising on SCTV. It had like sort of a political edge to it.
Okay, yeah.
But the funny part is when they got their Emmy, they were introduced by Milton Berle.
Oh, yeah.
Who was just kind of rolling their eyes at them. And Joe Flaherty was making, you know, giving the acceptance speech. And he was like, and Milton Berle is heckling him. And Joe Flaherty turns to him and goes, Uncle Milty, go back to sleep.
Oh, my God.
Which started a feud between them.
Oh, man.
I can't believe that we got something up here bigger than the cast of Hill Street Blues, which we've done on our show. All right. I'd like to thank. Sorry, Uncle Milty. Go to sleep. Okay.
Oh, by the way, it was, like, really weird. Like, during, like, the series, like, they would also have like special guests, like do sketches with them. So there's actually one episode where Bill Murray did a sketch with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that one. Who else was on there?
Yeah, yeah. So Bill Murray plays Joe DiMaggio. It's like Joe DiMaggio opens a restaurant on San Francisco's Wharf, where if a customer can strike him out, they get a free meal. So he's standing in his restaurant with this huge baseball bat. So they have old ladies come up and like try to strike him out, and he just always just like slams the ball into their face.
All right, you lose. Make sure she pays, Tom. Who's next, Benny?
I am, Joe.
You may have a free meal coming, lady. I feel like I pulled a muscle on my shoulder. All right, you lose. Make sure she pays, Dom. She has a scampi.
The what, Joe?
Scampi! Scampi! Okay, who's next?
And Robin Williams was on a few episodes as well.
Yeah, all right. Good for him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So anyways, I guess to wrap up, what do you think Second City's place in history is?
Do I'm rating them on 1 to 10 or
no, just as what do you think Second City's outstanding influence on history is?
I think they just kind of like the parody type things that they were doing was always really big, and the way they created that world. Like I think we mentioned this in our earlier episode, available on rtcksafe.com, on the Rutland Weekend Television one, where I think I mentioned this back then. I remember I thought SCTV did a way better job of actually creating that world of, this is a world of the small town TV station.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, so I think it's like influences when, you know, I guess you can look at like some of the movies that the SCTV people went into, or TV projects that they went into as well, that had that flavor, such as, you know, the Best of Show and Mighty Wind movies, which all were kind of like parodies of, you know, a certain niche or subculture. Like Mighty Wind was a parody of the folk music culture, and Best of Show was, you know, a parody of, you know, dog shows. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they had like Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara in those movies. So, you know, that those set of movies were kind of direct influences. But then I guess you can also look at, you know, sketch shows to follow, like The State or Kids in the Hall or Tim and Eric's Awesome Show, or even like Eric Andre, which is like kind of like a parody of a talk show, or even like Larry Sanders, you know. And even Matt Groening credits Second City for being the inspiration for Springfield with what they did with, you know, the town of Mellonville.
Right.
You know, kind of creating this, like, universe that operates on its own rules within itself.
Yeah, I mean, they even had, you know, like, yeah, because go back to the Mellonville thing. They even had a mayor that was John Candy as the mayor of Mellonville, who would give his, like, fireside chats. With his
fake, oh God, I just his, remember that.
Yeah, with his fake dog. Yeah, so it was to me that was just they created that, and they were able to kind of get away with, like you said, those blackouts, those really short things that might not go anywhere else that you couldn't really do in a live show. It was just cool to be able to see people doing that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it's like the shows that have that continuous that are essentially sketch shows, but have that like continuous flow and thread that weaves through the whole show and the behind the scenes. You know, Second City was like, you know, the first to do that, to create that like universe within it. Plus, it's just like really fucking funny.
Yeah, I mean, it's still funny.
It's not really dated. I was just like binge watching, you know, the last couple of days, and it's just like, it's just good laughs.
Yeah, I watched their first episode. We were both doing research. I watched some of the first season from 1976, and they had that their Jeopardy parody where it was Halfwits. Did you see?
Oh, Halfwits is amazing.
Which is basically more or less it's kind of the celebrity Jeopardy thing that Saturday Night Live's doing.
Three articles of clothing found in a bedroom. Lawrence Orbach.
Chest of drawers, Alex.
Listen to the question, people. I'm looking for articles of clothing. That answer was incorrect. Blanche Ray.
A parka?
Completely complete with the pissed off Alec Trebek. You know, it's you're
oh,
like,
seriously.
Yeah. Oh, if somebody could sue, it's basically go back and watch one of them. Yeah. Drop a clip in there, man. It's just like, whoa.
It is who reads. It's about books.
It's not whore ass.
But Halfwits is so funny. I think that's one of my favorite sketches.
Yes.
It's like Eugene Levy's playing Alex Trebek, and it's like, okay, we're back again. It's for the sixth week, and all the contestants are at a tie. Still at zero.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's so funny, like Alex Trebek or Eugene Levy as Alex Trebek, he hasn't like said more than three words of the question, mm-hmm. and Catherine O'Hara would buzz in, Dewey Decimal System?
Yeah, no, that's what I watched, yeah. Yeah, but I can't believe you even watched the Saturday Night Live. Yeah, because you watched one of the Saturday Night Live ones, and you're like, interesting.
Yeah, dude, you steal from one source, plagiarism, you steal from many originality.
Yeah.
But they weren't doing a Sean Spicer on SCTV.
No, they weren't. No,
that's their big thing.
Yeah.
Here comes Trump again.
I know.
So anyways, I think it's just time to plug away. Where can they find everything?
Well, they're going to be able to find everything. All episodes of our Harmon's and I's brand new spanking podcast, Comedy History 101. You can find it on iTunes. And even more importantly, you can find it on our brand new production website, right-click save, our new production company. The URL of that is rtcksave.com, right-click save, because somebody had already had the domain name, so we had to go with one that's shorter and not as easy to remember.
Not as easy to remember at all.
But it's okay.
You can check out all our past episodes, and I'm sure we got a lot of information wrong, so be sure to comment, rate us on the iTunes store, subscribe to our podcast, and also donate to the podcast. If you can't, we have a little button you can donate. This is our bucket speech. Throw in a dollar or two for the price of a cup of coffee if you can. So anyways, thanks a lot for listening. This has been Comedy History 101. And we're out.
Okay, all right.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.